Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the black market right after this. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, it's stocks, bonds, and Federal Reserve notes, and credit cards, and debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And that's very true when you're dealing with banks and government and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there is a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper over gold. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, then, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they must first take away the people's right to own gold and silver coin, to take away the people's right to own property and to destroy those property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and our property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that. And that's in my business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home study. For more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now and order yours. The number, 417-273-4967. Now, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study, and if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? The black market. You've probably heard that term, the black market. It conjures up in your mind, oh my God, that's wicked and evil. That's something bad. That's something naughty. That's something that I don't want to do. I remember as a boy back in World War II, we had a black market in meat and sugar and coffee. There were certain things that you had to have ration cards and buttons and stamps and all kinds of little government authorized goodies in order for you to participate, in order for you to get the things that you needed to buy. You worked like my granddad did in the mill at Corbell, California, and he got paid a paycheck. But it didn't make any difference how much money you had. You had to use your ration card to get your shoes. And so the money, along with the ration card in at the Buster Brown shoe store, would get you a pair of shoes. If you just walked into the Buster Brown shoe store and you said, I want a pair of shoes, and here's the money, and you didn't have a ration card, you didn't get the shoes. It was against the law. And the store would get into trouble, and they'd get fines, or maybe they'd get put out of business. And maybe the people that were trying to buy the shoes would get into trouble, and maybe they'd have a fine to pay, and maybe they'd have some jail time to serve. Yes, sir? That was called rationing. And rationing during wartime is fairly common. After all, during wartime, there's a lot of destruction going on, and there are big armies that have to be fed and clothed and housed, and there's a limited amount of shoes and leather and meat, milk, butter, and eggs, and that has to be rationed through the civilian society as well as the military institution. So it's common for government to institute regulations over money and commercial transactions, and they regulate and raise and lower taxes in order to create and to regulate and control the economy and to stimulate more production. So to stimulate greater production, they reduce taxes and pay more and give greater incentives to farmers to produce more, to plant fence row to fence row. And then in other industries that they want to discourage, they raise prices and they place rationing like gasoline. So they didn't want civilians driving cars and burning up a lot of gas that we needed for the armed forces so that they could defeat the Japanese and the Germans. And so you could only get 5 gallons of gasoline a week. And you had to have a ration card. And the price of gas was high. Okay, but not for farmers, because if we want the farmers to produce fence row to fence row, we have to give the farmers all the gasoline that they want. And we did, and the farmers could get all the gasoline that they wanted. So what was to prevent the farmers from using their gasoline to drive around on the roads? Well, you know, the government comes along and they colored that gas purple. So you could burn all this purple gas in off-road vehicles like tractors. But if they caught you driving up and down the roads, oh my goodness, with that purple gas, you know, then they got you. Well, what about the farmer who needs to run his pickup and his trucks up and down the roads? Well, those farmers, they got the regular gasoline, which was colored, but they got a different kind of ration card. They weren't limited to 5 gallons a week. They could get as much as they wanted. So they could go into the gas station and buy whatever gas they wanted. So old Walter Turkelson, he had his unlimited ration card as a farmer. And, of course, he burned gas in his automobile. Of course, you couldn't get gasoline in your automobile. You'd go get it in your truck and then siphon it out of the truck into your automobile and drive it anywhere you wanted. So the farmers actually took advantage of that loophole in the law. And they cheated a lot. And so farmers and farm families, they had lots of gasoline. They could drive anywhere they wanted. And then the workers that were working in the shipyards, they had to ride bicycles to work, or they had to walk because they could only get 5 gallons a week. Well, that's called the black market, or what is called the black market, is where you go out and you buy the gasoline or you buy the meat, milk, butter, and eggs, but without a ration card. Now, this is illegal. You know, in most cases, it's illegal. So my dad would go out to old Walter Turkelson, and he'd say to Walter, well, Walter, I'd like to buy some gasoline. Oh, Walter, you know. He says, well, I'd like to sell gasoline to you. You know, gas was 2 bits a gallon, see? And so Walter would double the price to 50 cents a gallon. Now, Walter is paying 25 cents for this gas, and he sells it to my dad for 50 cents a gallon, doubles his money, and he sells him this purple gas, which can only be used legally in tractors and off-road equipment. So to keep from getting caught, people like my dad would put a 2-gallon can or gas tank or something under the floorboard of his 1939 or 38, I guess it was, Chevrolet coupe automobile, see? And then he would take his gas his gas ration card. Now, he could get 5 gallons a week. And he'd put 2 gallons of gas in that 2-gallon can underneath the floorboards. And then he would go out to Walter Turkelson's and he'd fill up his gas tank with this purple gas. And he's driving around on this purple gas. Now, the government's not stupid, and so they put up roadblocks every once in a while, and they'd catch people. And these roadblocks, you know, in the old days, they used to have a sediment bowl in your fuel line. And so today you got a filter that goes through, but they had a sediment bowl in there. And so as the gasoline was going into the carburetor, it would go into the sediment bowl, and it was a glass bowl, and you just open the hood and look in. So the highway patrol set up a roadblock, and they're checking gasoline. So they just open up your gas, I mean, open up your hood and look inside to see what kind of gas you were burning. And if they opened it up and you got the red gas in there, that's okay. If it's purple gas, they got you. It's the gotcha game. So, of course, now, as the roadblock is coming up, my dad would reach down and he'd, under the seat, he'd flip the switch. You see, he had a switch there that would switch the pipes. And so, yeah, a valve is what it is. Actually, not a switch, it's a valve. And he'd switch over to the 2 gallons under the floorboards. So he'd, by the time he'd get up there, take, you know, just a couple of minutes, you know, or less for that gasoline to change color, see, and burn the gas up there into the sediment bowl, and it would change the color. And by the time the highway cop opened the hood and looked inside and passed it down, smile and wave him on, see, going down the road, and he'd reach down and flip the valve back over and burn purple gas. Now, of course, we look at that and we say, well, that's cheating and that's unfair and that's wrong and it's wicked, awful, and evil, and we shouldn't do that. I just wanted to point out that that's what the black market is. The black market is called the free economy. The free economy. We have that going on in America today. We have monopoly versus free trade. Let me give you an illustration as to how the free trade and the free marketplace works in the drug business. You know, Congress enacted a drug bill for seniors just recently. This is the above-ground economy. And so Merck and Pfizer and all the big drug companies, they're selling drugs to Medicare, and Medicare sends you down to the Rexall drugstore and you buy your drugs and the government pays for them. And of course, the bill says that you got to buy these drugs in the United States where they cost twice as much as they cost in Canada or four times as much as they cost in Mexico. Now, these drugs are manufactured in Boston and shipped to Mexico City, where they sell for one-fourth the price they do in the United States, and they're shipped to Canada, where they sell for one-half the price they do in the United States. But it's against the law for you to go to Mexico or Canada to buy these drugs from Merck or Pfizer or 3M or somebody else. Why is that? Well, because any time that government engages in trade, commerce, business, and industry in the marketplace, they pass rules and regulations and laws for the benefit of the manufacturers and the producers and the lobbyists and the people that are the insiders. It's always been that way. It isn't anything unusual. Now, for some reason, we don't think that that's immoral or unethical or wrong or wicked or evil or unfair if the government does it. After all, the government is God, and what God does has to be right, doesn't it? So we don't get too excited about that. And then, of course, they tell us that drugs coming from Canada, of course, are dirty, polluted, and they're filled with all kinds of filth and probably rat turds, and so therefore you can't buy drugs from Canada. And so they're working now to shut off the supply of drugs from Canada because, you know, black marketeers up in Canada, that is free market people, say to you people in the United States, look, just get online and place an order with your drug company in Canada, and instead of paying $100 for your prescription that you're now buying in, say, New York City, you can buy it out of Montreal and you can get it for $50. And many Americans are doing that. Now, one of these days, that's going to be illegal, and anybody that gets caught doing that is going to be fined and punished. And so, why is it that before the law is enacted, it's legal and lawful, and we can save $50, but as soon as the law is enacted and put in place, we're criminals, and we're bad people, and black marketeers, and we're wicked and evil, and just god-awful people? You ever wonder about that? Why is it that Merck and the big pharmaceuticals and the Congress and the President, why aren't they wicked and evil and unfair and immoral and unethical? Can you tell me that? Now, let me give you an illustration of how the free market works in drugs, and then we'll take a look at it as it relates to corn and wheat production. Now, you know that heroin is against the law. Heroin is an illegal drug. Now, when your doctor prescribes it in the hospital, of course, they don't call it heroin in the hospital. They got another name for it. I forget it right now, but they got this heroin drug. It comes from the same poppy over in Afghanistan that they make heroin out of. Well, they call it morphine. That's what it's called, morphine, here in the United States. And so the doctor gives you a shot of morphine, but Hank, the drug dealer down on the corner, he sells it to you. He calls it heroin. And it's very popular. And when Merck and Pfizer and 3M and the drug companies make it, it's perfectly legal and it's taxed, it's regulated and bonded and insured, and it goes through all the processes, and it's strictly illegal for anybody to have it except those that are authorized and licensed, bonded, and insured. And we all know how that system works, and the doctor uses it, and he cures you of your diseases and gives you pain-free baby delivery and all these kind of things with this morphine. Well, I just saw some numbers the other day. I thought I'd share them with you. This heroin is selling out on the street right now in Europe, primarily in London, England, for $50 a gram. $50 a gram. And that's down by two-thirds. You see, it was selling for $150 a gram 2 years ago. But after the Afghan war, after the United States threw the Taliban out of power in Afghanistan, they have now doubled, quadrupled, and sextupled the production of opium poppies in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is now the number one producer of opium poppies. And that's just in the last 2 years since America threw the Taliban out. See, the Taliban government over there, that was these bad, wicked, terrible, awful, evil, fundamentalist Muslim kooks, were opposed to heroin and opium poppies because they thought that it violated the law of God. Shows you how crazy they were. And so they banned it and they killed people, and they were just really down on this thing of opium production, and they eradicated it. Well, you know, you never eradicate anything, but they had it down to where Afghanistan wasn't producing very much heroin. So along comes the United States, and we came over and threw the Taliban out, and we had an alliance with the Northern Alliance. The Northern Alliance was at war with the Taliban because the Northern Alliance were the drug dealers and the drug growers, and they didn't like the Taliban because they were interfering with the free market in opium. And so we teamed up with the Northern Alliance, went to war, threw the Taliban out, and so now the Northern Alliance has free rein to grow opium poppies, and now Afghanistan is the world's number one producer of opium. And because of that, out here in the free marketplace, there is so much heroin available now worldwide that it has depressed prices. I mean, I can see the day when the opium producers of Afghanistan are going to go to the government for price supports, for crying out loud, and quotas and limits on production in order to keep the price up. Well, that's what we did in this country with wheat and corn and other grains during the Depression years. You know, if you produce too much of something, the price goes down. I mean, that's just market economics. It's what we call supply and demand. Supply and demand. Right now, the supply of heroin is so great and the demand is so low that either one, you've got to get three times more people to use heroin, or you got to lower the price in order to move what you got. Now, even at $50 a gram, it's pretty valuable stuff. Pretty valuable stuff. Let me show you how valuable it is. If you take $50 per gram and multiply that times 28, you get $1,400 a pound. I mean, this stuff's worth $1,400 a pound. That's pretty valuable. That's $22,400 a ton. And last year, Afghanistan produced 4,200 tons of heroin. 4,200 tons. That's $94 billion. $94 billion. Now, heroin is the least produced of the four major drugs. So you have cocaine, crack, marijuana, and heroin. And you know, this heroin is so expensive that there's not so many people that can afford it. And so everybody can afford a little bit of marijuana or hash or something like that. And then quite a few more people can afford crack, or quite a few more can afford cocaine than they can heroin. And so those products have their markets too. But just to look at the heroin market, which is number four in production, $94 billion, and that's just from Afghanistan, which produces more than anybody else in the world. But that's only half of the heroin produced in the world. Then the rest of the world produces another $100 billion worth. So the heroin market is $200 billion. Now, you take all the drug companies in the world. I mean, you take all the drug companies. You know, like Merck and Pfizer and 3M and all these. And, well, you add them all up, and people spend more money on heroin, cocaine, crack, and marijuana than they do with all the drug companies in the world. And you know what's really bad about that? It's all untaxed. Yeah, it's all untaxed. You don't know of any drug dealers personally now, do you, that are filing 1040 forms and saying, oh, last year on my heroin transactions, I made $100,000 and marijuana brought me in an extra 50 and so on. Did you ever see that? Okay. Now, that's why governments are opposed to heroin, crack, cocaine, and marijuana, because they can't tax them. Now, you can tax Merck and Pfizer, and you can bring them into what we call the above ground, or the economy. And of course, the rest of these drugs that we're talking about here, these are called black market drugs. This is the free economy. Now, here's the miracle of the free marketplace. In spite of the fact that heroin is illegal, in spite of the fact that if you get caught dealing in it, you will be prosecuted and put in prison for 20 years, in spite of the fact that the borders are closed and everybody's looking for it and the government is spending $22 billion a year to eradicate it, in spite of all of the opposition and all of the roadblocks and all of the armies and police and prosecutions and prisons and jail time, in spite of it all, there is so much heroin production that the price has dropped by 66% over the past 2 years. That's the miracle of the marketplace. In Bosnia, during the Bosnian War back in the 90s, coffee was selling for $4 a cup, and gasoline was $20 a gallon. But there was no shortage of either. Now, the marketplace will always provide whatever goods and services that people want to buy, because there's always somebody out there that wants to buy some heroin. And because of the risk that's involved, the price goes up. So heroin costs $1,400 an ounce. Now, your doctor down at the local Rexall store could walk in and buy an ounce of morphine, and I bet it wouldn't cost him $10. Drugs are very cheap to make. Drugs don't cost very much. Cocoa is a plant that grows, you know, the cocoa leaf. I mean, you know, there's plenty of it out there. And you take a look at corn. Now, you corn farmers out there are complaining about the prices that you receive for corn. You know, it's $3 a bushel. What you corn farmers don't seem to understand is the marketplace, and you have gone to the government in the economy, in the above ground economy, and you're trying to get the government to give you price supports and to help you sell this corn. And then you went out and you GMO'd this corn, and you got these genetically modified plants, and you're just struggling, all you corn farmers out there. You got this backwards. What you do is you go to Congress and you say, corn is a threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the public. and you get Congress to ban corn. You get them to declare that it's a toxic weed and that it's a danger to everybody, and you put a 20-year jail sentence on anybody that's caught growing it, and you lock people up if they get caught dealing in it, and you have an above-ground economy in corn that's taxed, and people buy, sell, and trade in it, and they have to be licensed, bonded, and insured. And you have to have a license to produce it, and a license to sell it, and a license to use it. And you have to get it prescribed by a doctor. Okay, now you got that? That's what you do. That'll cut the production of corn from whatever it is today to a very little bit. There won't be very much corn grown. And suddenly the price of corn and corn products, like corn syrup and things like that, will then, like heroin, go to $50 a gram. I mean, this corn is going to be so valuable that it'll be $50 a gram before very long. And then you'll have Mexicans smuggling corn syrup into the United States on the backs of donkeys and asses and mules, sneaking it across the Arizona border and through the deserts. And then you can have a whole new bureaucracy. It'll be called the Corn Police. You know, you got the drug enforcement agencies. You can have the Corn Police. And the Corn Police will be swarming all over Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas looking for corn smugglers. But my God, can you imagine the profits to be made in corn when you make it illegal? Because then you'll take it out of the above-ground economy and you'll put it into the black market. It's like De Beers has done with diamonds. And diamonds are a regulated monopoly. And anytime you can get a monopoly, you can get as much money as you want. You just name the price. But in the underground economy, in the free market, you have to compete with everybody else. And the reason that heroin has dropped by two-thirds is because there's another guy down the street who will sell it for $50 a gram. 2 years ago, you would have got $150 a gram for all of the heroin that you could put out on the street. Today, it's $50. $50. Well, it's still a good product, but I mean, you know, you've lost a lot of revenue, and that's because of overproduction. Too much production. And if a guy says to me, well, Gordon, I'm going to sell you this heroin and I got to have $100 a gram, I'll say, well, kiss off. I'll just go down the street and buy it from Tom. Tom's got it for 50. Can you imagine corn? How about wheat? All you wheat farmers up there in Montana struggling to make ends meet, trying to get the Congress to give you price supports, and then you got the World Trade Organization and everybody arguing and fighting and moaning and groaning about wheat prices and subsidies and import and export quotas and one thing and another and all this. Hey, listen, all you got to do is go to Congress and tell them to ban wheat production. Stuff's unhealthy for people. And all of a sudden, a market is going to develop in wheat and wheat products. I mean, can you imagine what the price of a package of Wheat Thins would be if they were priced like heroin? I mean, you'd be getting $1,400 for a box of Wheat Thins, for crying out loud. Now, you talk about gourmet eating now. All right, you starting to get the drift? Now, there's always been a free market, boys and girls, and the free market is as natural as going to the bathroom. Governments hate the free market because, you see, the minute that there's a free market out there, there will be entrepreneurs who will go out and produce and fulfill the needs of the free market. Now, you can take the price of gasoline in Kosovo or the price of gasoline in Bosnia. $20 a gallon, regulated and controlled. People are loading it in 5-gallon cans, putting it on the backs of donkeys and burros and smuggling it in from countries, risking their lives to supply gasoline in a war zone where mortar rounds are falling and artillery shells are exploding. You bet. You know, all you got to do is raise the price, and if the price is high enough, the customers will come. If the price is high enough, the customers will come. And the suppliers will supply. Now, when the price gets to be too low, like it is for corn and wheat, Hey, the customers don't come. And the suppliers out there can't make ends meet, and they complain a lot to the Congress, and the Congress then goes out and taxes the rest of us to pay the farmers, not to grow. Sounds kind of crazy. But that's what socialism does. It distorts the marketplace. If you want to know what the real value of heroin is on the street, you go to a street dealer in the free marketplace, and he'll tell you it's $50 a gram. That's the real value. And when the doctor is buying it for $10 an ounce down at the drugstore, that's a subsidized price. That's a subsidized price. Now, we're all paying for that. You know, we all pay in our taxes for these subsidies to the farmers. When we go to the grocery store and we buy a package of Wheat Thins and we pay a buck and a half for it, the real price of it is $3. You paid a dollar and a half to the grocery store for the Wheat Thins, and you paid a dollar and a half in taxes to the government. You thought you paid a buck and a half, but you really paid $3. See, nobody can count the taxes and the subsidies that they're paying. And so this brings up the newsletters. And so then we have a thing in our economy called inflation. And we have Alan Greenspan coming in, and he wants to print more money. And there are events that are transpiring in our economy. And there's inflation, and there's unemployment, and there's all of these economic words that scare us all so bad. So stand by, and let's give you a couple of caveats and an ad or two, and we'll come back and talk more about the black market when we come back. Let me tell you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at area code 417-273-4967. I guess I should remind you, too, that the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and from the scriptural perspective, 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and vice versa. They don't necessarily endorse our views either. So tuck that one away in your heart so that you don't think that these people that we recommend, sometimes they don't recommend us. I've had students call me and say, "Do you know what that guy said? I called him and he said that you were a creep." Well, don't be too surprised. All right, now let's take a look here at the Mogambo. This is called the Mogambo Report. I'm going to take a look here at inflation for a moment. And we'll tie this into the black market, and I'll show you. The economic newsletters that you hear on the Law Hour quoted from time to time, such as the Mogambo Guru or the Privateer or maybe Franklin Sanders Money Changer, will have articles and stories that deal with the economy, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, and with inflation and other aspects of the economy that are just plain depressing. Depressing. When we talk about unemployment or we talk about the balance of payments deficits, and maybe you hear me talk about inflation and how inflation is running at 12 to 14% a year, and our government's lying to us through the Consumer Price Index and telling us that it's 2 or 3%. I mean, hell, you people know that's a damn lie. The housing prices, for crying out loud, are going up 10-12% a year and have been every year for the last 4 or 5 years. And then the price of oil has gone up nearly 50% in just the last year or two. And you see, the way they keep the consumer price index low is that they don't include housing and gasoline in the CPI. Now, don't you people pay rent, and don't you people buy houses, and don't you people buy gasoline for your cars, and yet that's left off of the CPI? I mean, come on, boys and girls. You know, government lies to you a lot, and the real numbers don't come out. And so Dan Rather comes on, and he explains to you, and he tells you what's going on out here. This is what you're supposed to know from the government's point of view. And then there's reality out there. There's reality. So I have some business principles that I use, and I teach a business school here at the law school, private business. And I do business in gold and silver. I do business in hard money. I operate a private business. I don't have a license. I'm not bonded. I don't have any insurance. And people, you know, they say, well, my God, how do you do that? Well, I practice in the underground economy. I'm a black marketeer. I have a black market school. Yes, yes, boys and girls, it's true. Yes, I'm unethical, and I'm not licensed and bonded and insured. But that doesn't mean that I'm violating any laws. You see, our Constitution provides, I can't speak for the rest of you people in the world, but here in the United States, our Constitution provides for hard money. We have a clause in our Constitution that says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, 99.9% of Americans, and I would just bet you, I'm going to read you a little piece out of the Mogambo Guru, I'll just bet you that Richard Doughty over here, who buys and uses, and I'm sure he's got gold and silver, he talks about it all the time, I'll bet you that he is not operating on a free market economy. I bet he does not deal in gold and silver coin. I just bet you. Now, when I say that, I'll bet you that he's got a bank account, and I know that the International Forecaster deals in commercial paper because they take credit cards for their subscriptions. So I just thought, well, gee, on the one hand, we're over here griping and complaining about our government and the economy and the inflation and Alan Greenspan and the Congress and all these bad, wicked, terrible things that are going on. But, you know, we have gold and silver coin here in America, and you Australians and Canadians do also. Did you know that? Did you know that your governments are minting gold and silver coins in your countries every day, and you people don't use them? So, you know, it's not the government's fault, and it's not my fault, and it's not God's fault that you people are suffering from inflation. So I thought that this week what I'd do is I'd share with you this private business black market economy and show you the contrast or the differences between the two. And my God, far be it from George Gordon to interfere with the socialist economy of the United States, Canada, Australia, or Western Europe. I mean, you people are certainly entitled to and have a right to practice socialism, and more power to you. I just don't want to participate with you because there's no money in it. That's why I don't grow corn and wheat, because there's no money in it. Now, there's other things for you to grow out here that make money. And there's other things out here for you to deal in beside commercial paper. And people that are complaining about inflation are the people that are dealing in dollars. Now, if I had $100,000 in the bank deposited up here in John Harlan's bank, you know, here in my county, we call it Harlan's Bank. If I had $100,000 in there and I was losing purchasing power at the rate of 1% a month, that's $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year, I would be writing a newsletter like the Mogambo Guru, and I'd be crying my eyeballs out. Why, I would be sad. I would be jumping up and down and yelling at George Bush and getting real angry with Alan Greenspan. I can understand that. What I can't understand is why the Mogambo Guru over here has $100,000 in the bank. Would seem like to me that he should have $100,000 invested in gold or silver or wheat or corn or honey and beans and oil and just all kinds of things out there that you could be investing in. Let me give you an illustration. I'll tell you a little story here. I had a student in here this week, and we were sitting here chit-chatting a little bit, and we were talking about inflation and price changes that are just going up all around us, you know. And we were sitting here talking about, have you been to the grocery store lately, and have you been observing over the last year or two the price increases going on in the grocery store? And I said, yep, I have, yeah. Now, my wife and I, you know, we're old folks now, but my wife and I came out of the Great Depression years of the 1930s. And so, you know, those Depression years were very vivid on our mommies and daddies, who in turn impressed them upon us little boys and girls. And when we sat down to eat dinner, just to show you how things were in World War II, we had a little gimmick there that was called clean your plate. You didn't leave the table until your plate was clean. So therefore, you never took more than you could eat. Now today, the mommies and daddies are all fat themselves, and so they lard on all this food onto this kid's plate until he can't eat anymore, and then he leaves half of it and gets up and walks off. And us old folks, you know, we look at that and we just shudder. I shudder to this day. I clean my plate. I'm an old man. I never take more food than I can eat. There's nothing left on my plate. When I finish, there's nothing left. I clean my plate. That's because of my upbringing. It's because of, we came out of such tough times in the 1930s and 40s, and compounded by World War II, there were shortages. You know, you got 1 pound of sugar a month. Now just picture this. I think you got a pound of red meat per person per month. Try to live on that. I mean, you guys go into McDonald's and order a quarter pounder, and you do that every day. You know, you guys get a pound or two of meat a week, and that's just for lunch. And then you go home and you have a steak, and or you have something else, and you know, every time you go to the restaurant, you're ordering meat. I don't know how many pounds a month you eat, but in World War II, we were limited. We were regulated. We not only had to pay high prices, we also had to get in line to share the shortage. And that's what socialism is all about. That's what government regulation and control is all about. It's share the shortage. Now, there's no shortage of heroin. There's lots of heroin out there, and at that price. Now, there's a price for heroin at that price. If the government were to legalize heroin in the morning, do you know what the price of heroin would be? First of all of the street dealers would go out of business, because Merck, Pfizer, and 3M would be selling it through the local Rexall store, and so would your supermarket be selling it like Sudafed and Bear Aspirin over the counter, and the price of it would be about $1.95 an ounce. I mean, that's the price of heroin. I mean, you people could live the rest of your lives just totally stoned out of your minds and never wake up to reality forever and do it cheap. The thing that keeps the price of heroin up is government regulation and control. If it wasn't for socialism, if you had a free market in heroin, and we used to do that. I mean, there was a time in America when it wasn't against the law. You know, Arthur Conan Doyle, you know, old Sherlock Holmes was an opium smoker. He was an opium addict. And a lot of people were opium addicts. And you could buy the stuff on the market. You know, they used to put cocaine in our Coca-Cola here in the United States. And I know somebody woke up one day and said that was bad for us. And so they took the cocaine out of the Coca-Cola. That's why they still call it Coke. In fact, that's what cocaine is called, coke. There's no shortage of cocaine. There's tons and tons of cocaine, and it's illegal. Can you imagine how much cocaine there would be and how cheap that stuff would be if it were legalized? You know, you're out here spending, I think it's, $15 for a bottle of whiskey. $15 for a bottle of whiskey. 75% of that price is tax. The price of whiskey, if you just removed the government, took the government out of, you took the regulations and controls off of, just got the government out of business, do you know that whiskey would be less than $5 a quart today in our inflated money? And the people that would be producing it would just be getting rich. They'd just be making money hand over fist. You would not believe how much money they would be making. Let me give you an illustration. Farmers are getting $3.50 a bushel for wheat. $3.50 a bushel for wheat. There's a pound of wheat in a box of Wheat Thins. Now, the farmers of America, if you were to double the price of wheat to $7 a bushel, every farmer in America would go out and buy a brand new John Deere tractor. I mean, every wheat farmer in this country would have a new pickup, a dually. He'd have a new, brand new $40,000 Ford dually and a brand new John Deere tractor if you doubled the price of wheat from $3.50 to $7 a bushel. That's how much prosperity would hit the wheat farmers of America, which in turn would trickle down through all of the John Deere dealers and all of the Ford dealers and all the rest of the little stores that these farmers would be spending this windfall on. And do you know how much the price of Wheat Thins would go up in the grocery store? They would go up a nickel a box, from a buck and a half to $1.55, which wouldn't affect us and our buying habits a bit. Because I've seen Wheat Thins at $1.97 and $1.25. So there's a wide variation in the price of Wheat Thins. And yet you could double the price of wheat. Double it. And it would bring great prosperity to agricultural America, and it wouldn't affect the marketplace at all. Now that's what you wheat farmers are dealing with your socialized wheat growing program. They don't have that problem in heroin. The heroin growers of the world are prospering like they have never prospered before. And in fact, the price of heroin has gone down by 66 2/3%, and the heroin growers of the world are just ecstatic because even at 1/3 the price, they're getting rich. In spite of all of the billions of dollars that you wheat farmers are paying out of your $3.50 a bushel to stop the heroin trade, you can't stop it. You can't even dent it. In fact, you haven't even slowed down the production. It's gone up so high in spite of all of the obstacles that you put in its place, or put in place of it. How do you like that? Now that's the resiliency of the marketplace. It's the resiliency of the black market. We just call it supply and demand. It's no big deal. It's just supply and demand. Now there are certain principles that go along with business. You know that? I thought I'd share some of these with you, along with the international forecaster and Franklin Sanders and the Mogambo. And let's get into this thing of the black market over here. And perhaps some of you out there, instead of being morose and sad about inflation, you know, when I see inflation, I see great economic opportunity. I mean, I'm looking at economic collapse around the world, and I am poised on the edge of great business opportunity. During the Great Depression, 25% of the American workforce was unemployed. And people look at that and say, oh my God, 25% unemployment. You know, I see 25% unemployment as one of the greatest boons, one of the greatest benefits to business that the free marketplace could bestow upon me. And that's because 75% of the people are employed. 75% of the people are making money. 3 out of every 4 are potential customers. You know, there's this old story, the glass is either half full or it's half empty. Depends on how you look at it. I'm a salesman. I'm a businessman. I'm an optimist. When I look at the glass and it's half full, I say, wow, look at the glass, it's half full. I only have to work half as hard to fill it up. Pessimist looks at the glass and he says, my God, it's half empty. Why, how am I going to stretch it out? I won't have enough. I'm going to die of thirst. There's not enough water. Now, it's just a matter of how do you look at it. Now, I'm not advocating drugs. I've talked about drugs, you know, on the program a number of times, but drugs just seem to be the number one product in the black market. And there's a black market that will spring up. Anytime the government comes in and interferes with the marketplace, prices will rise. That's why I've told you many, many times, there isn't anything that government cannot do. half as well for twice as much. Nothing. And every time the government involves itself into the marketplace, prices go up and supplies go down in every single case. When government got involved in the education business, prices went up. It now costs in America over $7,000 to educate one child for 1 year in the public schools. In private schools, it's half that. In home schools, it's one-tenth of that. And the outcome is, in the public schools, well, to give you the three numbers here, you've heard this before, but let me give it to you again. Your child, on average, in a home school, will test at the 86th percentile, at the 80th percentile in private school, and at the 50th percentile in public school. So, if you educate your child in a home school program that you can buy for $546 a year, and educate your child at home with that program, it will cost you $546, about one-tenth or less, and your child will have 60% more knowledge at the end of the year. He'll test 60% higher for one-tenth the price. Now, that's what the free marketplace does. It gives everybody more for less. Now, why anybody would want socialized medicine? I don't know, but people worldwide want socialized government medicine. People everywhere want insurance. Insurance is socialism. Socialized medicine is socialism. Every country that has tried socialized medicine has destroyed their free market medical services. They get less medical services and pay more for it. And they believe that they're getting it free. You get worse product, costs more, and you believe that it's free, and that's why you want more of it. So people want more socialism, which gives them less. Now, we Americans used to have a marketplace economy in medicine. And I remember my wife's granddad was a doctor in Cortez, Colorado. And this old doctor, he'd tell stories. And back during the 20s and 30s, when medicine was free in America and we had a marketplace, the doctor made house calls. And the reason that he made house calls is because he had to compete with other doctors. And every doctor that came out of medical school was another competitor. And there wasn't any health insurance. And without any health insurance, the marketplace was, a baby was $25 for a delivery. So, some prospective mother would come in and she'd say, well, I'm going to have a baby, and because of that, I need a doctor. And so the doctor would say, well, I'll deliver the baby and help you with the process and the pregnancy for $25. And so today, you know, pregnancy is a medical emergency. No woman could dare to have a baby at home. I mean, that's impossible. That can't happen in America. In fact, 35% of Americans can't even have natural childbirth. They have to have cesareans now. But there was a time when the marketplace regulated baby delivery. So most women delivered their babies at home, and they did it with a midwife. And then as you got up the economic scale and you could afford a little bit more, maybe you'd have your own private doctor do it for $25. And so this old country doctor would go out and he'd deliver babies. And sometimes he'd have baby problems, and there would be poor people. And so in Cortez, Colorado today, there's a museum dedicated to this old country doctor who had accumulated over about 50 years of practice. I mean, he was an old man when he died. And this old man had, when he'd come out and he'd work on some guy at the farm, he might take a calf or a cow, or he might take meat, milk, butter, or eggs, or he might take money or a grandfather's clock or a wedding ring or something for his services. And so, of course, he collected all of this property, and when he got to the end of life, he had all of this stuff, and he donated it to a warehouse or to a museum. And so there was no medical shortage in Cortez, Colorado in the 20s and 30s, when this old guy was 40s and he's practicing. And it was a free marketplace. There was no insurance problems. He didn't take insurance. There wasn't any health insurance. And people were financially responsible for their own medical bills. And so they decided whether or not they wanted to hire this guy or not. Should we go to this doctor and have a doctor attend this woman in her pregnancy, or should we just have a midwife and deliver this baby at home? And I can assure you that people were having babies in the 20s and 30s. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here today. Now, today, women have to have pediatricians. Now, these are pregnancy specialists, and they cost a lot of money. And these women work in big corporations like General Motors or General Mills, and they have health care insurance that costs $9,000 a year. And because of this socialized medicine, that's what insurance is, these women actually believe that their medical services are free. It's paid for by the corporation. Now, the corporation would be paying you $9,000 a year more, but they have to pay that $9,000 to the insurance company, and the insurance company has to hire a lot of people to administer it. So 27 cents out of every health care dollar in America goes to administration costs. That's number one. So either you get 27% less medical service, or your medical service costs 27% more, and that's just to administer the insurance costs. Insurance costs 27% more. That's socialism. That's bureaucracy. Now, in America, we don't have socialized medicine like you have in Canada. Here, we operate under a case called Hale versus Henkel, and that is, the government licenses the corporations, that is, the insurance companies, the HMOs, and licenses the doctors in the hospitals, and we administer our socialized medicine through our corporations, which are licensed and chartered by the government. In Canada, you people do it directly. You just have a health ministry, and you get your card, and you pay your taxes, and the government pays the hospital bills. Here, the government licenses the insurance company to pay the hospital bills. We have the same kind of medicine in America that you have in Canada, and it's getting worse, just like yours did. Now, when I was a kid, there was never a shortage of a doctor. Anytime you wanted to go to a doctor, you went, and the cost was $5 for an office call. And $5 in 1952, boys and girls, was a lot of money. And you'd think long and hard before you'd go to the doctor. And then when you had to go to the doctor, you went and you paid your $5, and when you walked out of there, it didn't cost you 27% more. And old Dr. Walsh, you know, he'd sit there and talk to you and do whatever he needed to do to solve your problem, one person at a time. That was called the free marketplace. Today, we call it the black market, the underground economy. Can you imagine a doctor in the underground economy? Well, next time we'll talk about doctors that are in the underground economy who don't deal in insurance and who can deliver competent medical care in America and do it for an affordable price. It's in the underground economy. Well, I'm about out of time, boys and girls. That's the first program here in the series of programs that we'll call The Black Market. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. There's the signal that says time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, good night, friends.